everyone, and welcome back. This is Julie Bates with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 309. Today's episode, like virtually all of them, are for a group of people that I know, and I hope for an even larger group of people I don't know, but I am going to revisit the force fetch. And don't run away. You know, it's like, oh, I don't need to know about that, or I don't want to. But this is for people who, one, have odd ideas or have had difficult experiences doing it themselves. But since I force fetch dogs for so long and just did it for everybody, and now I'm not doing it for everybody, and I'm trying, there's a lot of people that are doing it themselves for the first time. And some people have absolutely no preconceptions about it, which is very good. I love that, because then they're just going to learn what the thing is all about. And then there's other people who have seen it done and literally are horrified. So have seen some very unpleasant and nasty things. So what I'd like to get across, for one, is that you can do it. Provided certain things are in place ahead of time, you can force fetch a dog, and it is not a horrifying thing. I've seen some stuff that people do, and I'm very sorry that they feel that's necessary. And what a lot of trainers do, or experienced people do, is they were taught a certain way, and so that's what they do. And they continue to do it, and it works for them, and they're happy with it. And, you know, I did some AKC obedience early on. And when you get into above the novice and you get into the open and the utility and stuff, then the dog has to retrieve and deliver to hand. And so I had done that with a Doberman and a Dachshund. Not the way that I do it now, but I had done it as a kid, as a younger person, kid, by just figuring out what it was I needed and then sort of working on it, and I got the dogs where they did that stuff and they could do it. And then I go into the retriever world, and it's a different teaching the dog that you have to bring something to me and deliver it to hand is a little different thing. And the primary reason is because the force fetch is the process off of which all the future handling and all of the good bird carrying behaviors, that's the tool to make sure that all that happens. So if you are talking about hunting dogs, particularly retrievers, particularly if you want to continue through the different levels of handling, your force fetch is important. And I don't like the title, but it's the title. Everybody calls it the force fetch. That's all I've ever heard my whole life. And it's, you know, force fetch. And I know with some breeds and in some places, they literally mean I'm going to make this dog retrieve. And, you know, I suppose that if you have to do that, that seems, I'd much rather just have one that retrieve, makes it way easier. But that's not the circumstance I'm talking about. I'm not talking about how can I make this dog retrieve this thing. What we want to do in the world that I've been in and exist in is we have a retrieving dog of some sort, a dog that retrieves. And we need it to, you know, pick up whatever it is that we have asked it to pick up and then bring it directly back to us and wait for us to take it. And for people that compete or hunt, that's actually very important, because you can't have them, if you did not completely down a bird, did not completely kill it, and it's still fighting, and the dog picks it up, they have to bring that back even with it scriggling around in their mouth. And if you injured a bird, or let's say you shot it a little too close or too hard, and so there's a lot of pieces of stuff hanging out, then they still bring that back. They don't really evaluate, you know, well, this is too icky for me. This is too stinky, and this is too something else, or this is too far to go, or whatever. They don't do that. They just bring it back to you the best they can. So the process that you do that, and I'm going to kind of talk about this, one, in terms of yes, you can do it, and two, making sure that people understand that I'm also talking about this in a way that lends itself directly into the next steps of starting pile work and double T stuff and all of that. So it's going to be what you would do if you want to continue. And it, you know, I would do it anyway. Every dog I ever force fetched, and I don't know how many literal hundreds and hundreds and hundreds I did of those, but every single one of them, whether they were going to go on to the advanced stuff or were not, I did exactly the same way. Because what I was doing was imparting in this dog's mind a certain kind of a response in a certain situation. And doing it without making them think that this was some really horrible thing. So, in other words, I'm going to teach you some stuff. It's a little bit unnatural. Work with me, and we're going to get through this. And the net result is we'll have a real clear understanding of this retrieving business. By the way, dogs, a lot of the handicap assist dogs, the ones that can go get the phone or go get the your wallet or get something that you need. Okay, all of those dogs are taught you have to go get something and you have to bring it to me and hand it to me. So in many, many uses of dogs and functions of dogs, this concept of please go get what I ask, come right back to me, and let me take it from you. So this is not just, you know, retriever hunt test stuff. It's not that. This goes across the board. And to have an animal clearly understand the expectations of retrieving, which is go get it, come back, wait, and I'm going to take it from you. And when I do, let me have it. Now, before we get into this a little bit, I want to make sure that, and I've said this so many times before, a lot of problems are created in using misunderstood training pressure here that makes dogs start to manifest their anxiety, their concern, their fear, their really strong resentment and pushback in their mouth. And so you want to be careful not to create mouth problems, which can happen. Again, it's when this becomes something that the dog is a very negative thing and it's very difficult or very unnatural and it's a very, just an unpleasant, bad thing. You might get a dog that's going to chomp down and not let go. It's like, no, you've been making me pick this thing up. I'm not going to let go. Or many other things. Now, some dogs just have, you know, manifest a little bit of anxiety in their mouth. Anyway, you can make it much worse here, or you can keep it from becoming a problem here. And so anybody that's planning on force fetching their dog needs to be aware of that. And if you've never done it before, then you don't even think about that really. But I just want to put that into people's minds, not to worry you, but to emphasize why when I talk about doing this in a very mindful approach, that's why. I don't want to create any problem that 3 months from now is going to do me in. I don't want that. So be aware that their mouth is where a lot of anxiety and angst comes out in a variety of ways. And so be very, very careful about that. So if you have never force-fetched a dog before, which every single good force-fetching person in the world has been at one time, is someone who's never done it before, you can do it because we all did it. We all have, all of us that now force-fetch well, didn't know how to do it, and so went through the same thing. So don't, you're not outside any kind of little population. You're just coming into the fold here. So don't worry about that. Couple things you have to have ahead of time. Now, this is my opinion, right? Other people do stuff really different ways, but I'm just going to talk about, I like it, one, not to be very hard for me. I like that. And I really like it not to be very hard for my dog. And so that's the approach that I have. I don't have screaming dogs. Well, except for one dog one time. The owner, I told the owner, this is a crazy dog, because as soon as I started doing stuff, he just started screaming, yowling. Out of anticipation of, I was glad people weren't watching. That's not on my force fetch video, because it's like, he's just nuts. Anyway, now he's doing super well, but sometimes dogs just show their anxiety different ways. You want to have a dog where the obedience is good. And I mean, when I say good, I mean like my kind of good, which means they pretty much do everything you say first time, don't argue. And when you tell them to sit, they sit and remain seated. You have to have that. If you don't have that, then you're going to be fighting basic obedience and the force-fetch process at the same time. So make sure, for two reasons, that your dog has very good obedience. One, so that you're not arguing about whether they sit or not or walk forward with you or not. And two, so that they have already learned. Sometimes this person asks me to do stuff that I don't know what it is and I don't really care for it. I don't see any reason to do it, but I still have to do it anyway. When you already have that in the dog's mind, it does make doing now carrying it further to another kind of unnatural thing that won't make sense to them because they've already done that. So that's two very compelling reasons to have your obedience very, very good. I never started it until, you know, they would heel and sit and the leash was slack and they knew exactly and they believed that they had to try to do what I was asking. So there's several steps you can see. Just YouTube it. There's 8 billion videos and there's a lot of different ways to do it. So do what your life allows you to do. Your dog needs to be in a seated position when you very first start this stuff. Be in a seated position. So I finally, as the years went by, I just refused to get a table because I'll do it right on the ground. Well, after a while, it was like, that's a lot of bending over and doing a lot of stuff. So then I had a force-fetch table so that I could just stand up, and I was right even with the dog's head and mouth and all that stuff. So do whatever works, but in the beginning, whether they're just with you on the ground or whether you want to elevate them onto something, they need to be there and sit. Now, I always, in the very beginning, when on the table, I would clip them to a little pipe that I had. If anybody has ever seen my video, you can see right on the force fetch table. The dog is seated, can't go anywhere, just sitting there first. Got to get them relaxed with that. And be all the years I did it on the ground, I have my good obedience. So now I'm going to get up kind of by maybe a wall or a fence or something so that they can't. They're just next to me. And we're not going to be going, the dog can't decide which direction they're going to move. They're seated. You could have them sitting next to a fence and just kind of clip their collar onto the fence. So, okay, you're just here right now. But you know, I never had to do that very much. What you want to do is teach your dog that I am going to say the word fetch once, not over and over, right? And I'm going to open their jaw. Now, whatever, they're actually right in front of you, or right at your side right there. You open their jaw, you put a small bumper, not a big giant one, one so that their mouth isn't just jammed open so it hurts. Put the bumper in their mouth. Make sure you put their lips up so the lips don't come down between the canine tooth, the big fang tooth, and the bumper, because then that hurts. And so if it hurts, they're not going to want to hold it. So make sure there's no pain. Make sure they have all of their adult teeth. If they're teething, we're going to have more pain. We don't want anything like that in the middle of this process. So you put it, say fetch, open it up, put it in, close the mouth, and just teach them to hold on to it. And there's a whole lot to this. Like I said, there's all kinds of videos out there, stuff. Look at it. I always do it with gloves because you get like spit and bump into teeth and stuff with your hands. Always use the same bumper, so it's just, you take all the variables out of this and teach them to hold it. Now, you're going to probably have to hold their head up if you're not, don't have them clipped to something, and you're going to have to hold the bumper in their mouth. So you do that one underneath the jaw and one on top. And sometimes I'd put the top where I covered their eyes a little bit, and for some reason, that made them resist very little compared to if they were looking around, kind of like blinders on a racehorse. And so just teach them to hold. Don't let them spit it out. Use your hands. In the beginning, sometimes they really fight that because it's very unnatural. So instead of being mad at them because they're doing it, understand they're doing it because they're going, what on earth? You're stuffing something in my mouth. What's happened? Oh, my. And they can get very panicky about it. So know that going in. And then when you can, don't clamp down. One, don't restrict their breathing through their nose. That's very not good, right? When you suffocate them, then they really hate it. So you have to hold the bumper in their mouth and allow them to breathe. And if they get real wild and crazy on you, you've got a hold of, I hope, I always had the the leash on, or I had my hand in the on their head, holding the thing in there, and I would use the word sit. And I would even maybe jerk them a little bit to sit to get their mind off of fighting this thing. And then when they just rested and settled in and quit trying to resist, I didn't let them let go yet, but I would tell them, yeah, reassure them, there, that's what all I want. That's all I want. Just hold on to this. We're good. And then when they relaxed and just yielded a little bit, then I would give my whatever command you want. I would say drop and take it out. And of course, they're just going, what on earth has happened? You've gone nuts. They really do. They think you've gone crazy. Understand that part. Yeah, okay, yeah, I haven't gone crazy, but okay, we're going to try it again. And so you do this little thing for maybe a couple minutes, maybe. Not more than that, because then this becomes a torture session, and you don't want that. You get them where at least they understand the first concept of you just sit there, and I'm going to put this in your mouth, and just keep it there. That's all. And I've heard on this stuff, a lot of people say when you're going through the force fetch, they'll quit retrieving and, you know, don't do all that. I have almost never had that happen. But that's because I don't make this some horrendous session. I always make sure that they kind of at least understand, just do this one little thing for me, we're good. Then when we come off the table or off the sit that we're doing on this, I'll go throw a happy bumper for them. It's like, yeah, now go get it. Grab that sucker. Bring it over here. Do that kind of thing. So that the bumper's always a good thing. It's just this thing that you're doing right now that makes no sense. The elements in this that are important, and I can see right now I'm going to have to maybe do a two-part thing on this. The elements are important is that you have only a few things involved. We're not fighting the obedience in the sit. We're not getting angry and emotional because you're just toast right then. We're understanding the dog side of this, which is like, what on earth has happened? This is terrible. Right? Yeah, I get how you feel that way, but just hold on to it a little bit and do it until they are at least yielding a little bit. Maybe on day one or two, I've had a few that just never did yield. So I had a lot of kind of harsh sit jerks. Sit will always, and I don't mean just a little, I mean one that are like, holy cow, I get their mind off of being upset about what's in their mouth and on the sit. And if I did my obedience well, that works. Okay, if I did my obedience well, and I kind of do that little, I jerk them because I got both hands on their head or neck there, and when I jerk it, it's enough where they're like, okay, I'm sitting, and the mouth relaxes. And I don't take it out, except it's the first couple days and they're just fighting me. You know, I'll go for a couple minutes and then I go, all right, we'll be back at this tomorrow. All calm, not mad. And because I know it's going to get better. So I, you know, if it's your first time, you're like, I didn't think it was going to be this hard. But understand why it is. And it makes it a lot easier on you as the trainer. And then when they've finally yielded a time or two for you, then you take it out. So in a 2 or 3 minute session of this sort, you know, you might have it in their mouth 5, 10 times. Take a reading. If they're just really fighting you, don't just stay at it and at it, because then they're just going to continue to up the fight. But if they're starting to understand a little bit and they're yielding a little bit and they're just letting you keep the bumper there in their mouth and they're not, you know, wrangling their head around and trying to spit it out, they try to use their tongue to roll it out of their mouth. When they've kind of stopped that, get one or two or three of those things. And then tell them, you know, that's praiseworthy. Not the praise for every time they take a breath the right way. But when you, that's a reassure. I'm going, this is good. It's the new thing we're doing. So work with me. And if you stay calm like that and keep your voice calm all the time, then, and the only place you get a little firm or abrupt is on the sit to redirect their thinking off of spitting this thing out and back on keeping their bottom down. And that's how you start this. There's no roughness. There's no, I'm an ear pincher. There's no ear pinching. There's not, other than I am going to open your mouth and I'm going to put it in there, pull your lips out of the way and close it. That's going to happen. One of the things that you can encounter on this is sometimes they'll lock jaw on you. They'll either lock their jaw when it's in, or they'll lock, once you take it out, they just clamp down and go to say, I'm not going to do that again. Okay, can't get mad because you know why they're doing that. It's like, what is this nonsense that you have me doing right now? There's no context for it right now. So give them that. Understand they're going to be that way. If they lock jaw on you, if I can do it, anyone can do it. You just reach in there, not up, but behind the canines where there's the shortest teeth, on both sides with your thumb and your forefinger. Open it up with that open, you know, squeeze in there and that'll open. And then the other hand with the bumper just pushes the lower jaw down, sets it in easily, and then holds it in there. You can open, even the lockjaw guys, you can open those up. And if you have to do that, do that. If you do it calmly, and if you do it with a voice like the voice I have right now, and without the emotion or the fear, if it's the first time you're doing this, a lot of times, you know, it's like, it's kind of scary. It's like, I've never seen him lockjaw. Oh my gosh, this dog will hate me. No, that's not true. The dog is just telling you, I don't know why you're doing this and I don't like it. And of course they have every right to feel that way. But if you stay calm and persistent and you go back at it the next several times, pretty soon that stops. And when you take it out of their mouth, which is again, if they get kind of lockjawy, then you can, when you have your hand on the, let's see, one hand is on their upper jaw because you're going to have to force their jaw open to take it out. And then you grab the bumper, and if they're on your left side, if they're a left side kind of a dog, you grab the bumper and you roll it counterclockwise out, and that helps to open the jaw, and you pull it out just calmly, real calmly. I didn't say super slowly. A lot of people do this stuff real slowly. I'm going to open it, and I'm going to take it out. I'm not going to just... It nothing unnatural, not put it in super slow, and I'm not going to take it out super slow, nor am I going to jam it in and rip it out. Just a nice, mindful kind of in and out thing. And that's the first thing to get on these guys, is that particular step. If you, and I really harp it on you maintaining a complete, normal, non-emotional thing. Even if you're scared and it's the first time you've done it or second time you've done it, or you did it before and the dog tried to bite you or something, and so you're scared to death, you can't do that. Make sure the physical fight's not there. They will sit there. If you have to clip them to a fence, do that in case they're one that wants to wrestle out of this. And if you're a little tiny female and you have a 90-pound dog that says, I don't want to do this, then clip them onto something so they still have to just sit there. Take that part of it out. And also, don't get mad and don't get emotional. Now, I know easier said than done, because I'm sure I can remember being angry and stuff. But whenever I was, after a long time, then there's nothing I can get mad at. I know how to prevent all the problems that could be there. And I'm going to try and talk about that in these series. But you have to stay emotionally calm, because if you're angry, frustrated, you know, hopeless, some strong kind of emotion, the dog completely absorbs that. So if it's a fighter kind of a dog, a resistor who goes, this is new and I don't like it, and you get real emotional, the resistance, one of two things. If you're scary, then they're going to get scared. And if you're not scary, you're just really angry, then they're just going to get more resistant themselves. So your emotion gives them emotion. And depending on the dog, it going to be different kinds. Could be, again, it could be fear, it could be resistance, resentment. So the emotion only hurts you. So if you get frustrated, you're in the middle of this and this dog is wriggling around a lot and or else trying to, you know, won't let the go of the bumper or won't open their mouth, and you're getting a little bit tired of this. All right, that's why, one, it'd be nice to have them just clip somewhere so that you can step away. Just step away. And all you have to do is go, all right, I am more intelligent than this dog. And this has been done a zillion times by a lot of people. And I can do it too. So once I calm down, because this isn't helping me at all, and I'm only interested in helping myself, so let's go get this settled down. Settle down. If you're a little riled up, the dog's a little riled up. So after you kind of get your thoughts back in the right place and the frustration set aside in a jar on the shelf, walk back over And run your hand over that dog a few times on their back or down the front of their chest there. Let them know, I'm with you, dude. We both kind of got upset here, and it's not good for either one of us. Just kind of, but physically touch them so they know we're okay. And they know you're trying. And I'll tell you this, when you're genuine like that, now this is going to sound hokey. I don't care at all. It's going to sound hokey. But when you are genuinely trying to do your best for this dog, you're trying, knowing that, gosh, I got riled up. That's not good at all. And you go back and dig hard to kind of work back into this, your dog feels that. And when they see that consistently in your training, they will do the same. But if you're somebody that gets angry and frustrated, then the dog is going to meet you with that kind of thing, and you are going to just escalate the situation. Often that's what happens when people get real, I can't do this. I just can't do it. I'm no good, or this dog is no good, or wherever the blame is going. And it's because they got angry, and the dog then basically reflects that back to them. And yeah, you aren't going to get anywhere. So one of the most important things, and why I'm harping on it a lot here, is that you got to know that might be coming, and know that it's not in your best interest at all to have that. And when it shows up, then just step back, do some little coping thing, some kind of coping mechanism, go get a drink of water, come back, give the dog a bacon bit, like, hey, we're cool, we're all right. They need to know that stuff. This is not a dog bot that you're working with. It's not this animatronic thing that's supposed to do these certain things and should be doing this and that. And if you saw what somebody told you and you saw it on a YouTube video and whatever, none of that. Understand that this dog is going through what you're going through, only on the bad side of it, because you can't explain to them, okay, this is what we're going to do. You understand, they do not. You are having to explain to them, changing all the rules now, adding a new thing. It's not natural. And if you saw someone else do it and it was real easy and this dog is not, okay, you got a different student. Leave it at that. Yeah, I've force fetched a few dogs. It was so easy. I just felt like I was cheating. And then there's dogs where I thought, I cannot force fetch this dog. I do not know how. I had to get real, real capable of tuning into me to get me in the right place to see, come on, you think you're okay at this? Then prove it. Get this dog done. But it's done by understanding what a big thing this is to ask of a dog. And I've never had anyone tell me that ever when I was learning or anything else. I learned the steps, and I learned from really one of the best in the country that hasn't force-fetched a dog in 30 years, because they're way past that now in terms of, they don't have to do that. But I learned from the very best people. But I was not told, understand, for the dog now, this is like, what the heck has happened? That is very helpful. It doesn't get them out of anything. And it doesn't get you out of anything. It's just the nature of what's happening there. And if you do that, okay, then you have a dog that at least is ready to try this with you to figure out what it is you want. And when you start that way and then hold that throughout the rest of the process, which I will continue on the next session, it can work. I didn't say be nicey-nice. I just said you need to be non-emotional, understand what this is for your dog, and then proceed to educate them in the way that you have been educating them ahead of this on your basic obedience. Easiest way to get through that, because I have done it for so long, and I, being the laziest person in the world, right, I wanted the easiest way to do this on me and on that animal. And when you do that, again, they will reflect that back to you, and your process will be better. So that's the first couple steps, the obedience, and then getting them just to sit there and hold the bumper. Now, I have had some respected other dog people tell me, I'm told that they no longer teach hold in obedience, in force fetch. It's like, well, they may not, but I can't possibly understand how you could teach a dog, okay, you've got to carry this around and hold on to it no matter if it's flopping or doing anything else or icky. You've got to hold on to it and bring it back to me. I find that teaching this very thoroughly, there are no downsides to it. It is highly, highly useful. And to the very end, that's the first thing I would start in this particular process, because I'm going to be real fair to the dog and let him know what it is that I'm asking. So that's today's. I'll come back with the next steps. But this part right here that I'm talking about, I mean, it's so important. And if you've never done it before, can you do it? Yeah. But you have to think about it the right way. And if you're thinking about it the right way, your dog will be thinking about it the right way too. So that's today's. Again, wish everybody well, springtime, whatever you're doing with your dog, do it safely, do it well, and I will be back next week.